Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still listening, you're a terrible person. Hi guys, welcome to episode 10 of Slaughter.
Yeah, Slaughter. That was a new one. I've not heard that before.
It's very southern.
Is that honestly how he says it in his head?
I think so. I told him about the apostrophe before I told him the name.
We've got a podcast and it's got an apostrophe in it.
You look like you'd appreciate it. So we're doing Dennis Nilsson today.
Yes.
Which is a big one. So we're going to cut the chat straight into murder.
But keep listening because I know you're all excited to hear about what is going on with the Patreon.
What is going on with the Patreon?
I'll tell you at the end, Luce.
Okay.
Let's crack on to it.
So, born in 1945...
Back in time.
In Aberdeenshire, which when I was younger, I thought was abroad.
Well, it's another country.
Yeah, but I thought it was abroad.
As in another country?
As in over the sea.
That's not what abroad means.
Is it abroad? It can't. Scotland, it's not abroad.
Until they're independent, we don't care. While you're living under my roof... He'll do what I say. Okay?
And he fucks with my theory of murderers a little bit. He's not named after his dad. He's not the oldest son. He doesn't have a blow to the head. He's middle child to Elizabeth White and Olav Moksheim.
Is he Norwegian?
He went by Nilsson. So he didn't even have the same name as either parent, but I think the dad did that thing like my family when they moved from Poland had a really Polish name. And then they changed it to something.
So it wasn't... If this seems disjointed, it's because I just loudly went on about Lucy's actual surname for quite a long amount of time before realising...
Realising.
You have to donate $200 to get the surname. $100 and you can find out where we live. So it's really skewed.
So, yeah, they moved over and changed the name to Nilsson because Moksheim was obviously... Too much effort for anyone.
They were always getting it wrong on the takeaway.
The parents had quite a difficult marriage. The father basically was like an absent father. He was just like off.
He was in the
Norwegian forces. So he did that thing where like they go away for like 6 months and come back for like a month and then they go away for 6 months. And eventually he just didn't come back. He just abandoned them.
I don't know if... Well, it is a ball ache, you going back to Scotland.
Yeah. I mean, it's remote, so... He just changed his mind. So Nilsson had a very lonely childhood. They made a big deal on the documentaries that I was watching that he had a pet rabbit that died one winter and he was really upset that everyone said he'd starved it to death. And I had a rabbit that I didn't starve it to death, but I don't think I fed it as often as I could. And I've still got a scar where it bit me on my finger. But I still have dreams now that the rabbit's still in the garden and it's been like 25 years and I've just forgotten to feed it and it's like all like decrepit and gross. And I'm like, oh, I've totally forgot about this rabbit for 25 years. I should probably feed it. And it still haunts me, I swear.
That is why they give people rabbits though. Like, when children will nag for a pet, they want a dog or a horse, and parents will be like, no, we'll give you a rabbit or a hamster or a gerbil, because they know you're going to kill it, just so they can say, told you so, we knew you weren't ready for a dog.
But rabbits are proper clever. They're made as to die. No.
That's what they do them for.
But people have house rabbits, and they're basically like a dog that can't control its
bowels. A dog that can't.
But no. At least the poo's more palatable. Tweet us if you have a proper rabbit that's like a dog.
I'm not interested.
Fair enough. Don't fucking tweet us. He was really close to his grandfather, who he went on long walks with, and he said that that was probably the happiest that he ever was, and he spent a lot of time with his grandfather. But his grandfather suffered a heart attack while he went out fishing, and he died. And Nielsen went and visited his grandfather's body before it was buried, and everyone kept saying, he's sleeping, one day you'll be with him, he's in a better place, and all this jive, as you said to kids.
I heard quite a lot about that, that this was supposed to be some really significant moment in his life this time. And I was just thinking, well, you know what, if this one thing that all grandparents do,
they die.
Like, they're super, like, by nature they're a lot older than you, and they're gonna go. Like, I don't think having a dead granddad, like,
but it's so changeable, isn't it? Like, the relationship you have with your grandparents. Like, when I was younger, it's like, oh, grandparents died. And you, like, nowadays you think, like, there's some kids who are basically brought up by their grandparents, and it's really traumatic for them. Whereas for others, it's like, oh, I barely saw them anyway. Oh, grandparents died, whatever. So it's kind of like, sometimes it's almost like losing a parent.
Yeah, you're not going to convince me. Because number two, he was 6 fucking years old. I remember nothing from when I was 6 years old. Those memories aren't significant.
And he was like your dad to him. He was like the father figure.
Number three, point three.
And they lived with him.
Okay, they lived with him. They lived with him. Like, I think it's the way it was put to me. He's like, so Brian Masters was the official biographer of Dennis Nielsen.
Yeah.
And like, he's done books and he's done loads of interviews and he's out there. Like, he is definitely hanging on the coattails of Nielsen. But he
keeps... laid his career out.
He has. And he was accused of sympathising with him, and then he went the other way. Anyway, he said several times this, that this open casket thing was like a really significant memory.
Yeah.
And he actually said that this was when Nielsen's idea of death and love fused.
Yeah,
is that what you got? That. And I was like, no. How hot did his granddad look? For him to be like, oh,
well, that's why
death is sexy now.
I think that's a big leap that he started fancying his granddad because he died. Like, I was quite that.
I know they pay people to put makeup on the bodies so they don't look so grim, but unless they dragged him up, like, it's not happening for me.
Two favourite things together, murder and drag.
Like, oh, granddad, this contour looks delightful. Starting to feel certain things. I'm becoming a gay.
There's one thing I know, it's that you don't make someone gay by making a man look like a woman. That's definitely not how it works.
If you had to, if you were like, can you come up with a plan to turn this person gay? I would say step one is I'll drag up a man so he looks like a hot woman. That's step one of my plan. Step two is to stop talking about this because
your plan is very flawed.
I didn't. Someone asked me to come up with the plan. I'm not, like, I didn't want to do this plan.
He became much quieter after his grandfather died, and he stopped participating in family activities. Though I find this weird. He stopped participating in family activities. He stopped wanting affection from his family. He just became a teenager. Like,
yeah.
That's exactly what every child becomes.
Stop sticking your tongue in my ear.
His brother was popular, which made things a little bit more awkward, and he was closest to his sister. But, like, he just wanted to be on his own, like, basically all teenagers. Like, my niece, who was here at Christmas, literally spent the whole time on an iPad in a different room to everyone else. And she's not even 13 yet.
No, you don't want to.
That's life. So Nielsen's mother moved the children and obviously herself into a flat, and she married a builder called Andrew Scott, who apparently was a stand-up guy. He was a good stepfather to Nielsen.
His fault, basically.
Yeah.
Can't blame me.
Nielsen hated him at first, but I mean, you would, wouldn't you? And then eventually sort of got used to him and just thought he was okay. As a teenager, the way it was phrased where I read it was he discovered he was gay. like some sort of like he found it in the closet. You are gay. So he began to realise that he was gay, but he didn't come out, he didn't tell his family, he kind of kept it very quiet. He was basically quite ashamed and afraid of what people would say. He realised...
They say, to be honest, Dennis, the way you fancied your granddad kind of had a inkling. No straight man fancies the granddad like that. He must be a gay.
So he realised...
I mean, your granddad was fucking hot, especially when he was dead.
God. I don't know where you're going with this. I don't know where you can go with this.
I mean, that's the end of the story, to be honest.
Okay. Nilsson realised that he quite liked younger boys who looked a bit similar to his sister. So he kind of thought, maybe I'm not gay, I just fancy my sister. And it was very weird. So to check, he fondled his sister.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest way of finding out. So he fondled her, and then he later stated that he also fondled his brother when his brother was asleep. Which, if you listen to Lou Reed's The Internet, is nothing compared to what some of those fuckers do on those forums. There's a lot of panty sniffing going on of, like, mum's ancestors.
Oh.
It's just grim. So he kind of, he grew up, became a young man, joined the army after leaving school, and training as an army chef.
Because that's a healthy job. For anyone who's, you know, a bit on the edge... had a quite a fucked up childhood. Like, what we really want to do is train you to kill people.
Yeah. But to be fair...
when you're not killing, you can be chopping up food. Just so long as whatever you're doing involves chopping things to bits.
Yeah.
We're happy.
If I was going to become...
channel all that chopping energy into war and cooking.
If I was going to join the army, I'd want to be a chef. Like, that's the least frontline-y job. You're safely in the kitchen feeding the men. And you learn a skill. You're getting paid to train. I think it'd be good. And what do all chefs become?
Alcoholic!
Yeah, he became an alcoholic as well.
Nice.
Which I have had confirmed by one man on the Facebook group to be true. So he fell in love with a soldier who didn't like him back. And we all know when you're about 18, 19, unrequited love is the worst.
The fucking worst.
The worst. And he found that by drinking alcohol, it kind of helped him cope with his shyness quite a lot. And him and his friends would get really, really drunk and then sort of, like, pass out.
Yeah, I heard this, that some people, like, it wasn't sure if they were drinking to pass out or if he was, like, acting up, being like, oh, I'm so drunk. Oh, yeah. I'm just falling on top of you. Oh, I can't control my limbs. Sort of thing.
Yeah, apparently he would pretend to be more drunk in the hopes that they would sort of grope him, which is, I mean...
he's basically date raping himself.
You'd have to sort of cut a hole in the crotch area and, like, let it swing around to be... like, to get it in people's heads.
Yeah, no, he's like... that's next level desperate. Like, I'm not, yeah. He's gone from, right, so I'm hanging around here, nobody's molesting me, I'll just have to drug myself, get myself in a state, and then, oh.
I'm so drunk, I'm just going to take these clothes off and lie on the floor.
I'm so drunk, I'm just going to keep jumping up and down, doing squats, and hopefully a dick will enter me.
God, that's so you. And he found it really sick, and he started, like, fantasising about, like, when he saw them. Like, he didn't... well, he probably did touch them up. But he doesn't say that he touched them up. But he, like, he started to think about, like, oh, it's really hard that they're, like, incapacitated and unconscious. And, like, I would like to do shit to them.
See, I can get more on board with that. Like, not the love and death fused at granddad's funeral. But I can get on board with if, like, your first major sexual experience is... are all around this passing out. Like, you can't do... like, they wouldn't engage in the homosexual acts unless they had the excuse of being pass-out drunk. Like, then I can get on board with how...
yeah.
His idea of, like, sex and his sexual fantasies were linked with somebody being completely paralytic and completely, like, out of...
well, like, if you're pretending to be asleep, someone's got to do all the work in the sex. You could just lie there.
Pillow princess.
Yeah. So... see, he was changed jobs.
What, you're just saying he's lazy?
He was a lazy shagger, that's what I'm saying. No, he wanted to be the one that wasn't unconscious though, didn't he, really? He was posted as a cook in Yemen, and that was a
15, Yemen Road, Yemen.
Is that Friends?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, where have I heard of Yemen? But yeah, it was in Friends.
That's also where you can send things to us.
15 Yemen Road or Yemen. So this was dangerous because the prison was constantly being ambushed, and a lot of the people, well, a few of the people working there died. And he was actually, this is one of my favourite Nilsson stories, he was actually kidnapped by an Arab taxi driver who what? Beat him unconscious and then put him in the back of a taxi in the boot. And
do we think this is true?
I guess so. So he was, I mean, if there's anything that Nilsson wants, it's to be unconscious in the back of a taxi, surely.
Oh yeah, he just bloody loves that.
So what he did was that he came to and he waited for the guy to drag him out of the taxi, and he grabbed the jack that you used to lift up the car, and he beat the taxi driver, knocked him unconscious, then put him in the back of the taxi and drove off.
You think that's a knife? This is a knife!
Yeah. I mean, it's like almost...
You think you can do rape play? You've not met Nilsson.
If he wasn't so fucked up, it'd be almost like Jack Bauer, wouldn't it?
He picked the wrong fucker to knock out.
So, this experience sort of gradually worked its way into his sexual fantasies as well. He was kind of like,
he's just in the back of that taxi like, oh God, I am loving this.
Yeah, I'm bloody loving it. So, Nilsson returned to Britain and he was assigned to Plymouth. He worked there for a year and then he was sent to Berlin. And this was the first time he had sex. He had sex with a woman. He had sex with a prostitute. And what he said of the experience was, it was overrated and depressing. Which, I mean, she might
was moving too much. And there was a lot of vagina involved. I was hoping for a lot less vagina.
Too much.
I was really
parts.
Thinking that, you know, like the vagina was rubbish. The clit was amazing. If that clit could be longer, like loads longer, and with semen coming out of it, then I think I could get on board with this prostitute.
The ass though, top notch. When he did visit family, Nilsson's mum would be very vocal about wanting Nilsson to find a wife and settle down, as many parents are. So he kind of got the nagging when he went home. As we all know. He was given a supervisor job in Kentish Town. That was the end of him moving around. So he moved to London and he stayed there and worked there until he was arrested. So in 1975, he saved a 20-year-old called David Galichan. He was being threatened outside a pub and Nilsson was walking past and he kind of like stopped the guys from threatening this guy. And he said to the guy, do you want to come round and sort of drink at my house? And the two sort of hung out drinking. And then he kind of never left. They sort of both moved in together and they lived together for quite a while. They redecorated the flat, they furnished it.
Oh, are these the ones where they got the dog?
I didn't hear about a dog.
Yes, they got a dog together and they called him Bleep. And I was really confused because the whole time when I was watching these documentaries, they kept talking about the dog Bleep. I was like, is that the dog's name or is the dog called Cunt and they're just having to say Bleep? Because they can't say it out loud.
And Nilsson sort of became a bit of a house husband. Not a house husband. Like the breadwinner, so he was paying, and Galichan was just sort of living off him because he didn't really fancy working. And Nilsson had quite a good job, he was a supervisor. So he brought the money home and gave it to Galichan, and it was almost like domestic bliss a little bit. It was nice, but the relationship, it was basically based on the fact that Nilsson wanted to be with a man and he'd run into this guy.
Yeah.
Galichan didn't really want to work, and this guy
they'd
was
just
rich.
Fallen into it.
So it was just convenient. They began sleeping separately in separate beds. They had sex with the men. They argued. And Nilsson basically said, can you leave now? Which is one step up from just murdering him to get rid of him.
Yeah, like he obviously wasn't there yet.
Yeah. So Nilsson was now living alone. And at this point, he began the murders. So this is when it all started to kick off.
No, yeah, he definitely had the dog Bleep. Because the whole time, I remember thinking, like, you're not lonely, you've got a dog.
Yeah.
Like, pay more attention to the dog.
And it's funny how people will, people will do the most foul murders, but if you think of the idea of cutting a dog's legs off, don't you think, like, that's really fucked up?
that?
Isn't that horrendous?
Why? What are you saying?
Think of what this guy did. It's terrible. You're like, oh my God, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. Cutting a dog's leg.
You just put it to me out of the blue. I was like, why?
Well, because I was thinking, like,
I was just thinking about how I might chop up a dog.
No, I was just thinking how fucked
you have a dog. This is what's scaring
me. Yeah, but I can't cut his legs off.
Don't try and cut his legs. Like, no one's asking you to cut his legs off.
I don't want to.
Lucy, please don't.
I'd rather cut off a man's legs than my dog's legs. So Nilsson was now living alone, and he had sort of a demographic of people that he killed. He only killed men. And most of his victims were men who he met in local bars. And it was kind of like the expectation. It was like a one-night stand or people that he didn't buy around. And quite often it was sort of... It said homeless, but I think it was more like drifters who were out drinking rather than literally just going on the street and saying, you're homeless, do you want to come back with me?
Yeah, just like
I don't think you'd go for like...
Just not really in stable environments. Yeah. Like,
sort of like guys who'd like sort of run away from home or like sort of would...
Sort of like the kids from the Operation Orchid situation. Like, I mean, around... I mean, this was a similar sort of time, like late 70s, early 80s. Like, if you were a young man who'd run away to London, like, if you didn't get fucking kidnapped by Cook and his gang, you were getting strangled and fucked by Dennis Nilsson. Like, don't go... The problem is, no one's coming back alive to tell the other young boys, don't go London. They just never hear from them again. They're like, London's amazing. We never hear from them again. Yeah, because they're all getting raped to shit.
Have you heard... Have you read the book Stone Cold?
Nope.
It's a book that a lot of people study in, like, year 8, year 9. And it's really similar. It's about a weird old man who targets young homeless men and women. Now, it's for kids. So there's nothing sexual in it. But he murders them and puts them under his floorboards. I loved studying it because I was like, yes, we get to talk about murder. But it's really similar to Nilsson. I think it must be based on him.
Possibly.
But it's quite a good book, but it's like, it's one of those ones that you can see like why you'd study it. It's like, this book is trying to teach me things.
Right.
It's trying to educate me. So Nilsson definitely killed for the bodies rather than enjoying the murder process, I would say.
Yeah, I got that impression that he didn't actually like having to kill them.
Yeah, he just wanted sort of the end goal of the bodies, and he was sort of considered a fairly good talker as well, and he was sort of charming in the... I mean, I don't think that he was that charming. I think he was just a person who could hold a conversation, to be honest. But there's all this talk of him being...
To be honest, when I watched the police interviews, like, without subtitles, I had no hope. They probably just... He was just some little Scottish man. He spoke really fast. I just think they didn't know what he was saying. I think they were just smiling and nodding away, like, oh, yes, Dennis.
He's, like, motioning towards his house. They're just like, oh, I guess I better go. So the first murder was in 1978, and it was Stephen Holmes was the first victim. And this was, I guess it was out of the blue, because he didn't sort of build up to it. I know he'd sort of groped people in their sleep, but it was just straight away just a murder. So it was a young lad drinking in the local pub. And Nilsson invited him back, and they carried on drinking, and then they both fell asleep. Nilsson woke up and obviously saw Stephen Holmes sleeping and just strangled him and drowned him in a bucket. He then masturbated himself over the body a couple of times. This is from his recollection. And then concealed the body under the floorboards and eventually burned it in the garden months later. And he sort of started as he meant to go on, because that's pretty much how he murdered most of them.
Like, I heard that he said, like, nothing I'd heard they could come up with a motive for why he did that first killing. But it said that afterwards, when he saw him lying dead, like, he had a feeling of benevolence over him. Like, he felt like he looked so peaceful and he just wanted to take care of it. And, like, in between all the wankings, like, he'd wash him, he kept giving him a bath.
Yeah.
Giving him a bath. Put him in a way, being like, oh, he's rotting a bit, give him another bath, put him away, and he enjoyed, like, the taking care of him.
Yeah. Which makes me think he should have just got a real doll.
He's already got a fucking dog. Let's just remember, he's got... If you want to bath something, bath the dog. Although he didn't fancy the dog.
If he just...
This would all be so much better if he...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
You could just, you know, take it that little bit further and get into bestiality. This could all have been saved.
Not the dog. No, but he would have loved a real doll. There's people who wash them and like sit with them in the chair. Like, if you just got a real doll, they're really realistic. He would have been set. Done.
Are you trying to convince me to buy a real doll?
But do you want to murder
people? Are you working on commission for real dolls? I was thinking, I put that, I think you should get one of those boyfriend pillows. Have you seen them where it's like a big pillow with an arm so you can cuddle it in bed?
So then in 1979, he attempted murder of Andrew Ho, who was a student from Hong Kong, and Ho managed to get away.
But you calling me?
And he told the police as well, but he didn't press any charges. I think because he just thought, how can I prove this? Kind of makes me look weird going up to some guy's house.
Yeah.
Kind of, I guess it's like a embarrassing. Lot of like, oh, like I shouldn't have gone back. It makes me look like stupid.
Well, in a similar way that people feel weird about reporting a rape, like you don't think you're going to get taken seriously. There's automatically people that are going to put blame on you and judge you for what the situation you were in and stuff like that.
Particularly in the 70s where they're not completely non-homophobic, really. Particularly the police. There is this kind of like sort of hesitation, isn't there? And then there was Kenneth Ockenden, so this is victim number two in 1979, so the same year. And that was a Canadian student who was visiting his English relatives. And they met in a pub and Nilsson told him he would show Ockenden the sights. And basically, he was couch surfing.
Yeah.
So he was like, come and stay at mine. Now, we did a lot of this in America, and we... I don't know if... After reading all this, I don't know if I do it now, but basically, Emma and I, we used an app, but we just stayed with random people on their sofa or on their beds.
Not
on their beds.
There was very little concern over who we might be meeting. Like, I don't remember thinking, like,
the first time,
what if they murder us? I just remember, like, yeah, give us a bed. Oh, it's free. This is amazing. Like,
the first time was, like, a weird little house in the woods. And that was when I was most panicked, the first time we couch surfed.
When we arrived at his house, it was terrifying. It wasn't a house.
I don't think most people would do that, and I don't think most young women in a pair would do it.
It was filthy, and he just put mattresses on the floor in the spare room, and like on the floor there were like leaves and things, like
there was like dirt,
and they were like, "Oops, we've not got any curtains up here. I'll put a towel at the window."
Oh no, the towel smelled so bad. He would offer to sort of show them the sights in a sort of couch surfing, offering a bed way. And so the pair, Nilsson and the guy, went back to his house, carried on drinking, and then Nilsson strangled him with the cord of some headphones. Now, I don't know how that worked, because headphones are freaking flimsy. It must have been some of those big beast ones that you,
oh,
like,
yeah, they wouldn't have had earbuds back then.
Yeah. So it would be like one of those, like, I guess
Craig David's.
Yeah, the Craig David ones. And then this time Nilsson photographed the body in different poses, which is why I thought he would really like a real doll, because he's kind of like, he likes the animation of the lifeless.
He likes being in control of them, like, I can dress you up, I can, you know, put you in this position.
Yeah. And with Kenneth Ockenden, he put the body under the floorboard, but he kept taking it out just to sit in a chair and watch TV with it. So, again, that's really sort of weird. Sort of, I imagine walking in on that.
I think it's just bizarre. Freaky. And, like, again, like, I think this is probably why Brian Masters, the biographer, why people accused him of sympathising with Nilsson, because he went on about how lonely he was and how he was just killing for company. And I think, no, because he could have had company if he wanted it. Like, he had the dog, he could have had people, he was obviously able to invite people around.
He invited people around and didn't kill them all the
time. Yeah, but this is what I mean. He didn't want company, he wanted somebody that he could be in control of. Yeah. If he wanted to sit and watch TV and be social, he could have done it. What he wanted was somebody there who wasn't questioning him, who wasn't getting his way. He just wanted to feel like there was a person there, but he didn't actually want somebody else.
And also, I think at the beginning he did invite people around and sort of have like flings with people, but I guess once you've got the smell of rotting flesh in your house, that becomes a little bit more difficult.
You have to kill them in order to get them to stay.
Yeah,
he'd become nose blind. He must have done. It's sort of like, there was, by the end, there was that many bodies and he made no effort to preserve it. I mean, he tried, like,
he's removing the flesh and stuff.
But the smell must have clung to him, like, when he was out and about at his job. Like, I mean, he worked in a job centre towards the end, which already has, like, the stench of desperation. So then added to that the stench of death that Nilsson was bringing in.
The cadavers.
No wonder unemployment was so rife in the 70s. It was Nilsson. Do you want a job? Not if you smell like that, no.
No. So Martin Duffy was the third victim. This is a catering student from Birkenhead, and he was, oh, bless him, he hadn't paid his train fare, and so the police came and questioned him about it, and he just freaked out. He was like, I'm gonna go to jail, and he'd run away from home because he was afraid. So he'd hitchhiked to London from Birkenhead because he didn't want to get told off. He'd been sleeping for 4 days rough. And Nilsson offered him food and a bed, which again is so similar to Stone Cold, where he sort of targets people who are sleeping rough and says, I'll give you a bed and board if you come to my house. So Nilsson strangled Duffy once he'd fallen on the street asleep, and again he drowned him, so this time in the kitchen sink. And then he took a bath with him, and he was like kissing, caressing the body, using it for sexual gratification for a couple of days, and then it became bloated and he said, well, yeah, I'm not interested anymore.
Not interested in fatties.
Yeah.
Such a fattest. Oh, like, that's what happens in a relationship, Dennis. They get comfortable and they put on a little bit of weight. Sure, it might be water retention. Maybe lay off the baths. Like, it's your kind of your own fault.
So, and then he killed 5 more people. One was David Sutherland, but a lot of them are totally unidentified. So, it's scary to think that people still don't know who these people were.
I mean, it was amazing how they found some of them, because I don't know if you were going to mention it, but when they were trying to identify some of them, the way that they found Kenneth Ockenden that you mentioned earlier was because he was a missing person, and they thought, oh, he's new around, like, Nilsson usually showing people around. So they found an A to Z of London in Nilsson's flat, and then they used like fingerprinting, where they dusted every page and scanned it into the machine, every single page of the A to Z, and they found on like page 75 a thumbprint that belonged to Kenneth Ockenden. Half a thumbprint, it said, that's on the corner amazing. Of a page. I think, like, that's dedication.
That's not lazy police work. Sometimes
that is not, they like, went fucking hard to find it.
Yeah, that's good. So the bodies began to stink and the maggots were crawling out of them. Nilsson reportedly saying that he looked at them and there were like maggots crawling out of the eye sockets and stuff. I mean, really, truly horrendous stuff. So the end of 1980, he burned the bodies in the garden. And to hide the smell of burning rotten flesh, he stuck a tyre on the top, which does smell like shit, burning tyres.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, obviously it's a horrible smell, but it's still a smell that's going to arouse suspicion. Like, oh, like if it's burning flesh.
Like, not a driver. Who drives in London? No fucker.
Well, if you're driving, you can't burn your tyres if you're going to drive.
True.
But, like, does... You know when we talk about burning flesh? Like, is... I've never smelt a human on fire, thankfully, touch wood. But does it not sort of smell like a barbecue?
Probably not if it's rotten, I imagine.
Because I'm thinking, like, if he's just burning the body, people could be like,
lamb chops.
Yeah, whereas if you're burning rubber, people are like, what on earth is he doing? Like, you don't burn rubber in your own garden.
And also, burning
inhale
bodies,
the toxic fumes.
It's not like the bodies are just... I mean, they're mostly water, surely. It's going to be really difficult.
Well, after all those baths soaking it up.
Yeah. It's going to be really... I mean, it'd be hard to burn a body.
Well,
it's not like kindling, is it?
I mean, he experimented with quite a few different things that, like, he'd tried to boil the flesh off some of the skulls, or he tried to remove the innards. Like, he was definitely, like,
faffing around with it.
He'd been making, like,
I think
trying
he did more
this,
of that,
a little bit of that,
friendly
little,
garden,
little bit of that.
So in 1981, he met a young Scottish man and he wanted the Scottish man to come back to his flat. How do you think he got him to go back to his flat?
He said, I've got some puppies for sale.
No.
He said, not puppies. Shit. That's the only reason I'd go back to
How
someone's
house. How do you
house.
Get a Scottish bloke to
go? Oh, Scottish bloke. Whiskey.
Yeah, he challenged him to a drinking competition.
Yes.
Done. Malcolm Barlow was his name. I mean, we've had Kenneth, we've got Malcolm now.
I want some fucking puppies and whiskey.
So the young Scottish man, he committed murder in the same way they had done before. The next victim was Malcolm Barlow, a 23-year-old, and he was having an epileptic fit just outside of Nilsson's house. Have you heard of this?
No,
he was having an epileptic episode and he was almost dying, basically. And
oh, he bloody loved that, didn't he, Nilsson?
He didn't. He phoned the ambulance.
What?
He saved his life. He phoned the ambulance. He got taken to hospital. He was sort of resuscitated. He was brought back to life. He was fine. He went back the next day to thank Nilsson. Nilsson said, I'll cook you dinner. Murdered him. It's so weird, isn't it, that he would go to the effort of saving the man. And then it's almost like one day he wanted to murder and one day he didn't. Rather than like, I want to murder everyone all of the time.
Or it also goes, maybe it just all goes back to that control thing. Like, the maybe. Guy's having a fit outside his house. It wasn't, he would have to get the body.
Oh,
like,
I
whereas,
can't bother doing murder. I'll do one tomorrow.
Yeah, like, no, but in his environment, like, in my house, like, put some Lionel Richie on, you know, glass of
maybe
wine.
Hand-shaved.
Well, I did hear that you had to get blinding drunk to do it.
Really?
Like, but he knew you'd do it, but to deal with the bodies and stuff, he'd all... Well, he said this afterwards. I don't know whether to sort of diminish his responsibility. Yeah. But said he would have to get, like, crazy drunk.
He moved out of his original house and he moved to Cranley Gardens, which is the house that he... Because I was reading through and I was like, oh, right, that's it, the end. No, I mean, it's only partway through these murders. I mean, it's ridiculous the number of victims he had. And this house had no garden and no floorboards to put bodies under. So he obviously had to come up with a different way.
He didn't really look round that before he bought it then, did he?
I know, if you're going to murder people and that's the way of disposing of the bodies, you'd think you'd consider it. But I guess it's London, slim pickings.
Is this the top floor flat?
I don't know. I know the other one was the bottom floor and he'd negotiated having private use of the garden. But this one, I'm not sure what floor
it was
on. And he... So he... His next victim was called Paul Nobbs. And...
Sorry, we're not... Yeah, his name's funny and I know he's a victim, but just to give some context to that laugh...
We had
a friend called something Hobbs and for the whole of his school life we called him, whatever his name was, Nobbs.
He did love it, like he wasn't...
He enjoyed it. He thought, like, we made him cool.
We used to just turn up at his house as well and just be like...
Like, oh, is he here? Burn me a Green Day CD.
Paul Nobbs got away...
Oh, yes. No, I think I've seen this guy.
This guy. So there were two that got away. There was Andrew Ho and Paul Nobbs. So the rule
is
have,
like,
a funny name.
Like, he was still strangled.
Yeah.
He was still strangled, still attempted to drown him, but for whatever reason, he was able to wake up and he let him go.
No, that's different.
There was one guy who he strangled, and then he tried to drown him, and then he was in a coma for like 3 days, but he just let him go.
Paul Nobbs ran away before he was strangled. Okay. John Howlett fought back. He left marks on Nilsson, but he still died. And then in 1982, the one you're thinking of is Carl Stotter.
Yes.
He was 21-year-old,
yes.
And he was picked up in a pub. And Nilsson tried to drown him, and he thought he had, but then he wasn't dead. And when he realised he wasn't dead, he sort of resuscitated him, and he stayed at the flat for 2 days. It's almost like in that moment, I want to kill you, but then it didn't work, and he's like, oh, well,
the moment's
gone
now.
I don't want to do it now. So he left after 2 days, and he was strong enough to leave. And again, didn't tell the police. I think he was like, Nilsson told him, oh, I thought you were dying, so I put you in the bath to sort of resuscitate you. Whereas really, he'd been trying to drown him. It was really
sad, because then I saw an interview with this guy, and he was saying like, oh, I've really struggled for the last 20 years, however many years, with was this guy my killer or was this guy my saviour? Because I know that he saved my life. Without him, I'd be dead. I was like, no, he's definitely your killer, mate.
Yeah,
like, if you hadn't met him, you'd have been fine.
Yeah. So Nilsson, then, obviously his work career was fine, not inflicted by this, because he got a promotion to executive officer.
Do you think that's just because they wanted to put him in an office so no one else would have to deal with his stink?
Possibly. And soon after that, he met Graham Allen, who was 27, probably his oldest victim. He's been going for like 20.
All right, 27 is a spring chicken.
Look, on X Factor, you'd be in the like adult group,
just
the mature group at 27. They got in the same taxi, and Nilsson invited him over, and then he strangled him, and he kept the body in the bath. And then he dissected it. So he'd started doing these dissections now, which is obviously what he'd learnt in the army. He'd learnt to cut up bodies. And that was his way of hiding them now. And he just hid them around the house. So 1983, another victim. I mean, it's ridiculous. So this is his last one. Stephen Sinclair.
God.
I know. Good God. As usual, he strangled him. And then it was weird because he strangled him. And Stephen Sinclair had depression and he'd recently tried to kill himself. And Nilsson, once he was dead, put bandages over his slash marks on his wrists. And it's sort of like he was like trying to heal him.
After him.
And he dissected the body. Yeah, it was really good.
Put bandage on these poor little cuts, but then I will hack you to pieces.
And he hit the parts around the house. And he tried to flush the flesh, the organs and the small bones down the toilet. He also boiled the heads and the hands and the feet of a lot of his victims. Not to eat, I think, just to try and get rid of it.
Yeah, I think he realised that the flesh is the bit that's going to cause the stank.
Yeah.
Like, and trying just to get rid of it in any way.
Just don't murder anyone. That's one good way. Prevention.
I mean, it was mental. Like, his house was like the creepiest treasure hunt. Like, it was just, they were squirreled away. Like, you'd look to a room, looks perfectly normal, and then in every crevice, under every chair and floor, like, there's a little bag with something hidden in.
But it's weird to think that there might have been people who he was just hooking up with, that he didn't murder, who were staying there, surrounded by all these bodies.
Although, I don't know. Like, I've been to some nasty... There was one, when I was at uni, there's one guy, I went back to his house and I was like, because obviously I was still at university, I was like, oh my god, he has his own house, this is amazing. Got in and it was
still amazing.
No, it was the filthiest thing I've ever been to.
No.
Like, his toilet was like, I don't know what colour that toilet would have been, because it was just brown entirely. The kitchen, I was like, oh, can I have a drink of water? There was not a single piece of crockery or cutlery or anything that wasn't piled up dirty. I was so uncomfortable, like, obviously did whatever. Woke up at like 3 a.m. and just started washing up. I was like, I can't sleep knowing that it's in there. It's disgusting.
Oh my god, I bet he'd have you around again.
No, I was like, no thank you.
Did you tell him it was foul?
Yes!
So the only reason that Nilsson was discovered was because neighbours had called someone to fix the horrible stink that was in drains, and they were all clogging up. So a worker came out to look at the drains called Michael Catron, and he lifted the drain cover and saw like a flesh-like substance. And he was like, this is not normal.
Is this the guy that gross. Said, that was like, oh, I've not worked here long, but I know that's not shit.
Yeah. And so on the way out, he said to Lilson and his neighbour, who were sort of hanging around to see how it was going, and he said, that's weird. I'm going to come back tomorrow and have a look at it. And when they got back the next day, it was all cleaned up. The drain was clean. And so obviously he thought, well, that's weird.
He'd been out and cleaned an entire drain.
Nilsson had gone and... Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Well, no, because then it's really fucking suspicious. Although, I suppose less if they suspicious find than the pieces.
Flesh. So they kept on looking and they found bones in some of the pipes anyway. And Nilsson apparently said, oh, I think someone's been flushing Kentucky Fried Chicken down these pipes. Because that's what you do. And they called the police and they sent the bones off for analysis. And they questioned Nilsson and he basically started giving a full confession, as some murderers do.
Yeah, so I saw that. Like, literally, they thought he'd killed one person, put him in the police car, like, with no restraints, because he was super calm. And he just sat in the back of the car and went, yeah, I think there's about 15 or 16 bodies. Yeah. And, like, the police officer who was driving said in one of the interviews later, he was like, I did not know what to do. I was like, he's got no handcuffs on. Like, he's one of the worst serial killers we've ever had.
Yeah, because they thought it was one or two, didn't they? Yeah. So he was found guilty of 6 counts of murder and 2 attempted murders, and he was jailed for life. And he still maintains that he doesn't know why he did it. He still has no idea.
Just like he felt he needed to.
So the Cranley Gardens flat was sold in 2015, and it was below market value, which is amazing for London, really. I mean, if there's that's the only way I can think of that you could get a bargain in London, is buy a murderer's flat. I guess if it had been a house, it would have been sort of torn down, because it was a flat.
I'm just trying to think if I would live in one where I knew. I think I could live in a house if they were like... Because pretty much most houses you buy, someone's died in it. Maybe I could live in a house if I knew there'd been a murder. I don't think I could live in a house knowing that every fucking crevice has had human remains shoved in it.
I'd also be worried that, because it was so high profile... People would want come to come to your house looking.
Oh, yeah, because everyone knows fuckers that
address.
Fuckers
like you would come and knock on the door. Can we show you?
Which is always such an anti-climax. I mean, I've not done it, but like...
It's just going to look like a normal flat, isn't it?
Yeah, you go somewhere, you're like, oh, this is the house where this person was born. Yep.
Yeah, it's just ours.
Like, what now? Like, unless they've got a decent gift shop, it's going to be pretty disappointing.
It's almost like you're half expecting them to have, like, written a personal note on the wall and, like, oh, I found something new, some new information. I mean, you would check those floorboards, though, wouldn't you, if you moved in?
Yeah.
Just in case. So, in 2001, Nilsson, this is the last known thing about him, made a complaint that images and articles from the gay pornography he was ordering were being removed before they were given to him.
Oh, dear God.
So he was pissed off about that. I think they just like tough shit.
You do something to fuck with him, like, I'm going to replace, like, Photoshop all your gay porn so it's all fat, bloaty bodies. Because we know you hate that.
Yeah.
I heard something about that he would put makeup on himself, like, before the murders, he would like to put makeup on himself so that he looked like a corpse.
Oh, what a deviant.
And an interview that he was saying that, like, I wasn't trying to make myself look dead. I was trying to make me look different from myself. But I couldn't find many solid sources on this. So if anyone else has heard the makeup rumour, let me know, because I'd be interested to see if his skills are up to par with Sharon Needles.
Yeah, so that's Ellis Lawson. So, as we mentioned before, we have set up a Patreon, and you can donate money to our podcast, and you will get certain rewards for donations. So, there's going to be a bit of new content, and there's some other stuff that you can see. So, if you go to www.patreon.com/slaughterthepod, the same as our Twitter handle, you can find us, or you can go on the app to Patreon and then just type us in, and we should come up. And you can give to our podcast if you should like to. We're going to use the money to set up some merchandise so you can wear our ugly mugs all over your breasts and torsos.
Just as Ed Gein would have wanted.
And shout out to Holly Andrew, who was our first Patreon subscriber.
Yay!
Yeah, so if you do donate, thank you very much. If you don't, we'd love a review. And Happy New Year.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.